So, we'll first just finish off from last week's idea, and that is last week we started talking about, again, we're just collected pretty much every tshuva of Rav Moshe that I could find about things to do with abortion or things similar to that. On that list, so we started off last week with contraceptives. We basically spent most of our time on two different tshuvot. The first one was regarding just to be clear, the contraceptive method that we were talking about last week was a barrier method. In other words, something that was physically preventing the woman from being able to become pregnant, as opposed to the other way to utilize some sort of contraceptive method to ensure a woman doesn't become pregnant is hormonally, right? That's classically taking a pill. There's a hormonal IUD. Right? Those are ways that just prevent, by just regulating a woman's hormones, we're able to prevent her from getting pregnant. So these were written in, what was the first tshuva? 1935. So we were talking about physical contraceptives. One of them was probably some sort of diaphragm or something similar to that. And the other one was, a pessary. And the other, isn't pessary what we use for women that have urinary incontinence? Or no, whatever. And the other one is was basically classically a condom. So Rav Moshe had two tshuvot. The first tshuva was in a situation where the woman's life was going to be in danger if she got pregnant. Whatever disease she has, that if she gets pregnant, it would be dangerous for her. So in that situation, he said it's mutter. And in the second tshuva, it was a very, very long tshuva, but bottom line, he basically says that if a woman is going to it's not that she was going to get sick. It was that we were afraid she was going to get pregnant and have a fetus that would be sick. Most likely that tshuva was, he didn't say it explicitly, but it sounds like he's talking about Tay-Sachs. Apparently this woman and her husband are both carriers for the disease, which means anytime they have a child, there's a 25% chance that fetus will have Tay-Sachs. And so he says, in that situation, however, you cannot use a physical contraceptive because the only way that it's mutter, the only situation where we allowed it is if the woman's life was in danger. However, importantly, he's only talking about physical contraceptives. He's not talking about hormonal contraceptives using pills. Oh, he also was mechalek, in that second tshuva at least, between two types of physical contraceptives. One is, which is on the outside, in other words, like a condom, versus the other one, which would be some other thing that was placed inside the woman, where they can't be, it's not exposed to the external environment, and there he was potentially willing to consider the differences between those two things. Okay, this tshuva that we're going to look at right now, the first tshuva, and then we're going to be done with at least the contraceptive part. We're going to make one more point, and then we're going to move on to discuss abortion. But this first tshuva here, this is an Evin Ezel Simen Samachay. We once again don't have real page numbers, but we're going to use the Rav Moshe's page numbers. V'isha she'nishtatit acharei lila v'shnei yadim sholida v'arofim asru la litaber im yesh latir l'shamesh b'moch. Right? So this woman, that apparently she suffered from some sort of postpartum depression, apparently it was incredibly severe postpartum depression. And this happened apparently after two pregnancies. And the doctors told her it's not a good idea to get pregnant again. And so the question posed to Rav Moshe Feinstein is, can she use a moch? Most likely that means male condom, but we'll see exactly how he's defining it in this context. Hine vaday tzadak. It's ketel Torah, something, whatever. Basically it means whoever this rabbi that asked this question was, he was correct. Sheshtutu inyan sakana. That this, he's calling it shtut, he means this psychiatric disorder, postpartum depression, is dangerous. Right? This is not just dangerous for herself, but it's also dangerous for her other children. Right? There's no way we can protect their kids or anything else from her. And therefore, we should allow her to use a moch. Because already twice, she had a situation where she suffered from postpartum depression. ואף שהרופאים לא היו מוסרים אותה, אבל כיוון שהלכה קרבית בתרי זמנה, הביא חזקה. So it's weird, because here, right, so in the question, or the title, it says the doctors told her not to get pregnant. But here when he's analyzing, he says, well, maybe the doctors wouldn't have said she has to prevent herself, she's not allowed to get pregnant. But he says, even though the doctors would let her get pregnant, I'm telling you, halachically, I'm going to be more machmer than the doctors. Because maybe the doctors are going to argue that just because you had postpartum depression twice, that doesn't mean you're going to get it a third time. That's not accurate medically, but let's just go with it. That doesn't necessarily indicate that you're going to suffer from it again. However, he says, I know, halachically, that, why? Pikuach nefesh, we are always machmir. So in general, how do we define a rov? If something happens three times, we say, chances are it's going to happen again. However, we are machmir by pikuach nefesh, by situations where it would potentially be dangerous for the fetus or for any person at all, that will be dangerous. In that situation, we're machmir, and we say even two times is enough to call it a chazaka, and therefore we will not allow her to get pregnant. So yeshen lacha shatzmeinu ve'ulai avkashi emu harofim shirashal itaber ki rak mikra yeshen itcha lesamach leida mistaver shalo yusam chen aleim kimet shehufzeko betay zimni shenach lachal leida b'machlat shut. So he says, even if the doctors tell me that she can get pregnant, I'm not going to listen to them. Ibra, and he in the next paragraph, I'm skipping to the next highlight, ki asamanim sheyesh rofim shenotnim liten be'oto makom haya yoter tov ledina mishum she'eino sotem haknisa shel hazer lerechem. Aval ein ze refua beruah la'arbe nashim ein mo'alin hasamamanim. He says, even better than potentially using some sort of physical barrier is inserting some sort of, I'm not exactly sure what this is. Maybe it's a spermicide. I don't know. He calls it some sort of drug that you put inside the vaginal canal.
He says it's not very effective.
He says, whatever this is, he says it's not very effective. So I don't know what it is. And again, as we mentioned last week, whenever we read one of a tshuva like this, what we want to know is the halachic analysis, because then we could figure out how to use that halachic analysis for a contemporary context.
This is early 60s, were oral contraceptives available?
I would argue it isn't oral contraceptive, except he says...
I'm asking if it's available. I'm not saying... I understand what he's saying. I'm not disagreeing. I'm wondering if they were available yet.
I don't know. Aval, okay. If we keep reading, the part that I didn't highlight, Uma, three lines up, the last word, Uma, Sheze lokvav himtziu pilin.
Pilin.
They already invented pills. All right? You swallow it. V'omim sherufa brua, it clearly works. Shelo leitabel. Hinei... However, he has a problem. He says this whole pill idea is great because then I'm not actually doing anything to prevent fertilization of the egg physically. I'm just causing some sort of hormonal change to take effect, which would in theory not be prohibited. However, he says there's another issue, and that is breakthrough bleeding. That when you're on the pill, you got all this breakthrough bleeding, so you're causing these women to become nidas all the time. And just for, you know, if the whole idea here is to provide a solution for this woman to be able to be with her husband so that they can sleep together without fear of getting pregnant, you're not really helping the cause because she's still going to become a nida. And he says, apparently his son-in-law, Rav Tendler, who was a professor at YU, he probably knows these things. Apparently, 60% of women that use oral contraceptives see blood. It's just that most women don't really care if there's a little bit of spotting. Only religious Jewish women are going to care about spotting because they're the ones that care about nida. But otherwise, people don't necessarily care. Right? I'd rather you just use the rubber, which I think he's referring to a diaphragm, not to a condom. But again,
last time he was, but that last time was in 1935, and he's in like 1960.
So the reason why I think it's still a diaphragm is because he calls it begufa.
Could be.
So it's something that she's putting inside of herself. So I think it's still talking about a diaphragm. But basically, he says that why it's better to use a diaphragm. This way, I don't have to worry about breakthrough bleeding. It's actually interesting. I just had a someone just called me about this. Apparently, this woman, poor woman, apparently had cervical cancer. It didn't make sense. It was cervical. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but for whatever reason, they were going to do a hysterectomy. They're going to take out her uterus. Before the surgery, she was on oral contraceptives. And before the surgery, the doctor or physician told her that she should stop taking the oral contraceptives. The problem, and for whatever reason, for the surgery, I assume the reason is, and it's what I double checked with a resident at least, so I'm not sure how reliable it is, but with an OB-GYN resident, the reason is, I think, is oral contraceptive, the classic oral contraceptive pills, right? There are two hormones. It's also estrogen. Estrogen is also causes hypercoagulability, right? So it causes more blood clots. So if you're going to put some, give someone, if you're going to undergo surgery, you're already in a state where you can get more blood clots. So you don't want to be taking estrogen that can again compound that effect. So you want to stop taking the classic oral contraceptive. Problem is, this poor woman then is going to become a NIDA. She stops taking oral contraceptive pills, right? She now becomes a NIDA, and then she's going to do the surgery. And the poor woman, after the surgery, it's traumatic, it's hard, and she wants her husband to be able to touch her. And her husband won't be able to touch her, right? Because she would already become a NIDA before the surgery. Now, what's interesting is, after the surgery, she's obviously going to bleed, right? But that doesn't matter, because that's Dam Maka, right? That's not Dam NIDA, that's Dam Maka. That means that any blood that she has afterwards, I'll say the reason why she's bleeding is not because she's a NIDA, but because someone stuck a knife in there, there's some sort of wound. I know there's a wound. Not only do I know there's a wound, I know she can't physically be a NIDA because she literally doesn't have a uterus. She cannot possibly be a NIDA, right? So it's quite obvious that that blood isn't a problem. The problem is if she starts bleeding right before the surgery because she stops taking the oral contraceptive, right, then she's going to become a NIDA.
How long before is he talking?
So like I didn't understand why we couldn't just start this a while before and avoid the issue.
Or
I don't know. I had a simple solution to this problem, assuming that the medicine is correct. And the issue was the estrogen part. Just do what any breastfeeding mother does right after she gives birth. She doesn't take estrogen and progesterone pills. She only does the progesterone, not the estrogen, right? So just switch to that birth control. There's still some spotting there. But in spotting, we could avoid
the
those.
Spotting is not what's bothering the hysterectomy, I don't think.
Spotting might be a NIDA issue. We're trying to avoid NIDA.
Okay, that's fine.
So in theory, if you switch to a progesterone pill and you use a pad or something, you're constantly wearing a pad or colored underwear, whatever it is, so I can avoid the spotting issue also, right? I'll avoid both issues. So in theory, the solution could be she just switch pills, and then hopefully she won't actually get a full cycle, and then you can theoretically solve the problem. But again, these are all the spotting issues. I guess maybe when Misha first started this, it may have been more of a problem. Now, usually, most post-skim don't consider spotting to be to cause a woman to become a NIDA, especially unless obviously it's like on white. But if it's on colored or you have any one of the other heterim, then usually spotting won't cause you to become a NIDA. Anyway, so I'm not really sure what Rav Misha was analyzing, what he thinks about spotting in general, just based on that line. But that's just something to think about.
Have these pills changed in the last 60 years? That maybe it's not quite 60%?
I mean, I'm sure that... Oh, no, this the 60%, it's not... It's spotting on dual... with
I don't know.
I don't think so.
But the pills have changed over the
That's
the,
what I'm,
the
that's
60s.
What I'm thinking.
Like, they used to be way stronger, right? They were, like, really dangerous when they came out first. Like, so I don't know if that's what he's... If he's considering...
Rob's nodding, so...
I don't know, right?
I wasn't born. I have no idea.
Much harder.
Yeah. Much harder. Yeah, so could be. Any mistake?
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
Well, I do know that I don't know the statistics, but I do know that that for if you're using both hormones with the contraceptive, that a woman usually don't have a problem with the spot. But again,
this could have been just a very early.
I have no idea. I have no clue. Anyways, moving on to what we're talking about. He says. And the guy asked me a question, and we've already addressed this question before, and we're going to come up in the next tshuva as well. There's a very simple solution to this problem, right? A little bit dramatic, but a simple solution to the problem. What's our issue here, right? What are we talking about? The issue here is this woman is not allowed to become pregnant because it's dangerous for her to become pregnant, right? There is a very simple way to prevent someone from becoming pregnant, and that is you don't sleep with that person, right? Abstinence is a guaranteed way to prevent pregnancy. I don't know why he has to go this extreme, but whoever asked Ramesha this question says, well, maybe they should get divorced. I don't know why they have to get divorced. Just very simply, just don't sleep together, right? And he points out, this is something that we saw last week as well, this whole issue here is a problem of potentially levatala, right? That the zera is not being used to fertilize, would not potentially have the ability to make a woman pregnant. But Moshe says the same chiddush that we talked about last week, and that is, as long as it's being used, as long as it's being done in a way that isn't wasting, in other words, a husband has a chiyuv anah to his wife, he has an obligation to sleep with her on a, whatever the regular interval is, it's written in the ksuba, right? So because you have this obligation, so it's not considered levatala, you're supposed to be doing it. And therefore, it's fine. And therefore, she shouldn't get divorced. I don't know, again, why I went that extreme. But they could also sleep together. And even if it means doing something that will ensure that she will not be able to become pregnant. I want to point out that, again, the fact that he needs this justification is only because he's talking about a physical contraceptive. When you're talking about hormonal contraceptive, this is no question at all. And it's vada going to be mutter. Right? Hormonal would not be an issue at all. That's the first chuba. Now that he gives me this chiddush, I can now read the next tshuva. And he has another question. Right? This is a situation. I don't know why he calls it a emshila. I've never heard it used like that, but whatever. This woman had a hysterectomy. So maybe it's the same woman and they're following up. Right? So this is... the hysterectomy was my case. Not what he was talking about. I'm confusing myself. Ramosha says, a woman asked, she had a hysterectomy.
This is earlier.
Earlier, yeah. Also, it wasn't the same case.
It wasn't the same case at all.
It
can't be a follow-up.
This was my case. The woman has a hysterectomy. Now I want to know, can she sleep with her husband? Right? She has some sort of cancer, sounds like some sort of tumor, and they had to remove her uterus. So now, is her husband allowed to sleep with her? She's obviously going to be mutter, but lo yeh beze mishum iso, af shelo tuchal leolid, ve'im beze iso rotzat levatala. Why? Kiven shu derech tashmish. This is a normal way to sleep with someone. I don't care what's going on internally behind everything else. Just like you're someone whose wife went through menopause, is still allowed to sleep with his wife. She's incapable of having kids, but it's completely irrelevant. Well, what's relevant is that you have tashmish the normal way. You're sleeping with her the way you normally sleep with her. I don't really care what's going on in the internal organs after that. Ailonit is a woman that can't give birth. Right? So someone who went through menopause or someone who just for whatever reason can't give birth. And there's no difference. I couldn't care less about the fact that she does not have a uterus.
So someone who can't give birth or someone who can't get pregnant?
This is someone, this would be someone who can't get pregnant. Okay. She doesn't have a uterus.
Okay. She's talking about your definition of
right.
Oh, an Ailonit. An Ailonit is someone who, I assume she can't get pregnant. Okay. What does someone who can't give birth mean?
Well, he could get pregnant, but maybe he couldn't give birth naturally. Maybe in the time they're talking, maybe there's... giving birth. I don't know, like if you could get pregnant, but you couldn't live through a birth or something. That might be.
It'd be dangerous for her to give. Right. No. So that would be the first tshuva. The previous tshuva, that would be a situation where. Yeah. That's not an Ailonit.
Okay, Ailonit
is. Ailonit is just someone that can't get pregnant.
Okay,
all right. Now let's stop with that part of this of Ramesh's tshuvas. We're moving on to the next part, which is actually what we were supposed to be talking about, and we got distracted, as we tend to do. And that is the next page. Let's talk about abortion. This is a very long tshuva. Right? It's this tshuva. Yeah, this one's a little bit long. The next one's a little bit long. We have a lot of fun things to do. The one after that's even longer. Don't worry. It gets better. All right. Simen ayin aleph. Oh, yeah.
All
right. Let's do it.
Buckled in. Let's do it.
Here's the question. Rob, you're going to love the question. Im utal yivdok ubal. The question is, can you do a fetal ultrasound? Im hu chole shelo yachol lichyot adei hotzat luchluchit rechem ha'isha. Lachluchit. What do you want to do? I want to get some.
Is it an ultrasound?
No, it's not an ultrasound. It's a
ambient.
Yes. Yeah. What did you say?
I can't get the word.
Yes, it's amniocentesis. Thank you very much. Yeah. Right. V'davar, masha rofim himtziu sheyochin notzim ha'ubal shumei isha kshimu uberet kvar yud bet shavot. Again, they're not taking out of the fetus. The way he's describing it is not exactly accurate.
I'm sorry. Can we just say, Imutal Dov Kubar, Imhu Cholesh, Shlo Yuchal, the Holiday Hotzat?
Yeah. By drawing water, as we know, or amniocentesis.
The amniocentesis.
It's not. Yeah, it's not modern Hebrew, but that's what
he means
about.
Yeah. Again, not exactly what they do, but whatever the way he's describing it is that you take something out of the fetus. That's not what we're doing. Obviously, we take from the fluid around the fetus. But okay, when she's pregnant, kval yud bet shavuot. This is already 12. Says 12 weeks at the tvav shavuot. Meat sorry lachduchit liodim ize im huvlad keder stam vladot sheroin lachiot kefiz man stam anashim kefi akitzva shenikva leh mehashem yitbarach or shuvlad choleh sheochol lachiot ela ad shtayim shelosh shanim. This is, says if we could check. Apparently, they're doing some sort of check, some sort of genetic test, basically. And they're able to tell whether or not this fetus can survive more than 2 or 3 years. In other words, what disease is he looking for?
This
is Tay-Sachs. This
talks about 25%. Yeah.
And he also he loves talking about it. All these tubas are basically Tay-Sachs. So genetic testing is a good thing. Ubutkin baze. Isha she'adav vlad kazeh, she'lefi devar ha'ofim, alua isha zo asafek echad me'arba. Right? Apparently, this woman is not randomly doing this test. This woman has previously had a child with Tay-Sachs. And the doctors tell me that 25%, that she has a 25% chance in all future pregnancies to have a kid with Tay-Sachs. That is, as we know, correct. יש להתיר לעשות בדיקה זו האישה שבה יד הוולד כזה ונישאה בו עוד הפעם, והם יראו לפי בדקם שגם זה הוא וולד כזה יעשו רופאים שהפיל וברזה שנקרא, Neil, what's that word?
Abortion.
Yeah. Oh, Rabbi, I know you like them more. All right, so what does he want to do? He says, why are they asking me this question? What is the point of doing this genetic test? You're not going to try to fix anything. Right. You just want to abort. This is a binary question. Yes, abort, no abort. Why? I would just point out.
By a test, with reason, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would just point out that there are people that use this Ramesha in maybe some more contemporary settings. I have heard them say this, where they have argued that Ramesha says you shouldn't get a fetal ultrasound, and it's also to get a fetal ultrasound based off this Ramesha. Oh, I give away the ending. I apologize. He says you shouldn't get the check. You shouldn't do it. I would point out that even within Rav Moshe's worldview, there's still a very good chance, a very good reason to get a full anatomy scan and get all the testing that you can get. Even leave the abortion part of the question aside, but if you see that the fetus has some sort of cardiac defect or something else, A, there are things we can fix in utero, and B, you want to know that you should give birth in a hospital where there's a NICU and where they're standing by ready to catch the baby as soon as you deliver. There's a very good reason to do all these tests irrespective of anything else. It's not just a question of abort, don't abort. It's much more, there's much more nuance.
It's also very far removed from an ultrasound. Very far.
Correct. But again, this is how they're using the Sermesha.
Okay. Also, taking it to the next step, didn't he ultimately endorse the Dori Yesharim thing on this baby?
Dori Yesharim is fundamentally different, right?
Right, it's different. But I'm saying, he said no for this because then it becomes an abortion issue. But if you're talking about before, if you're avoiding it, then he endorsed it. But that was still controversial, right?
It may have been at the time. I don't think anyone now, no matter what, where you live, I think all Jews get genetic testing before they get married, which is a good idea, good policy.
At the time, I'm sure there was a bunch of people.
I'm sure there's always something. Right. Yeah, but I don't care about what people argued about 60 years ago. I care more about people nowadays telling people that they shouldn't be getting tested, which is based on Ramesha that didn't say that. And as Neil points out, there's a big difference between amniocentesis and ultrasound. Mm-hmm. Also, amniocentesis is a small risk of having a miscarriage.
And now there are even more markers with what seems to be a simple blood test, although it's not. As opposed to amniocentesis, even less risk.
But again, there's no reason really with Ramesha's position here to be mechalik between any of these cases. His point is, if the reason why you're doing a test is to know yes abortion, no abortion, why are you doing the test? That's basically his point. So I don't know why it would matter. Even though he's not talking about fetal ultrasound, I don't know why it would matter.
This seems very narrow just for the
I don't know, my nafkamina. What's the difference?
Between this and ultrasound?
Yeah. I mean, I know what they do.
Because you use ultrasound for so many more things. It's not just for...
Again, it depends what you mean. If the question... Again, you're jumping to what I said. You're skipping. It's not fair.
I'm sorry.
Meaning, if the question is abort, don't abort, then he's saying, why are you doing this? Don't abort is the answer.
Well, but here he says...
And he couldn't care less. Wow. Right? We didn't even read this
stone
part
cold.
Yet. I'm giving.
Stone cold.
It's stone cold. And Ramesh is a nice guy. But again, look at his analysis. Read it. Let's read his analysis so we can appreciate where he's coming from. Why? Says it's an iser ritzicha. It's murder to kill a fetus. If it's murder to kill a fetus, then, you know, I don't care if you're going to not feel well, not feel great, have some sort of, like, you know, a psychological disorder afterwards. You're not allowed to kill somebody. Having Neil show up to shul every week hurts me a little bit, but I can't kill him for that.
Okay.
Not yet. We'll talk. Fine. V'rak b'mekashe leilet k'shi'i efshal sh'yichnu shneihem ha'em v'avlad. What's the only exception that we've seen previously? A situation where the mother and son, mother and fetus, won't be able to survive. Both of them won't be able to live. In that situation, only when the woman's pregnant, she hasn't started the whole delivery process, only then will I argue... not me, the Mishnah argues, that we're allowed to kill him. Even in that situation, what is the only reason why I said it was mutter? The only reason why I'm allowed to say it's mutter is because he's a rodef, as we've established before, right? Because we have a general rule in Judaism that if I am trying to kill you, you're allowed to kill me first to prevent me from killing him. Same situation with the fetus. The fetus here is trying to kill the mother, so I'm allowed to kill the fetus before the fetus kills the mother. I actually have no idea what that is. Clearly, the Rambam thinks it's a real Isser Ritzicha because he had no other justification. The only way he was able to explain the Mishnah was by saying that it was a situation of Rodef. By the way, what is the ramification of arguing that it's rodif? Two situations where the fetus, where a woman who is pregnant is going to die. Okay, one is the fetus is causing she has factor 5 Leiden syndrome, right? The fetus is causing hypercoagulability. He's causing this woman to have blood clots, right? Because of this fetus, this woman is having more blood clots and she is at risk for dying. I got that medicine right. The medicine was accurate, correct?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. The other option, well, you give me a look, I was worried. This is like step three. The other situation is if a woman needs to get chemo, radiation, right? She has cancer, diagnosed with cancer. She has to get radiation sooner rather than later. And so we want to abort the fetus because we don't want to expose the fetus to radiation. It's not good for him. We don't want her to be pregnant while she's doing this. If I am arguing that the reason why I'm allowed to abort the fetus is because of rodef, in which situation am I allowed to abort the fetus? And in which situation am I not allowed to abort the fetus? Or
yes.
Both?
The first one, yes. The second one, no.
Correct. Biduk, right? It's exactly what Moshe would potentially argue. He would argue that in the first situation, the fetus is killing the mother. Right, the reason why the mother's life is in danger is because she is pregnant, right?
I think ectopic pregnancy is your classic one. That's going to kill the mother.
Yeah, ectopic pregnancy would kill the mother. Exactly. Ectopic pregnancy, I could kill the fetus because...
No questions asked.
Yeah, because the fetus is... fetus is a strong word for ectopic pregnancy.
Right.
But whatever this blastocyte is killing the mother, right? But in the other situation, the fetus is not killing the mother. Cancer is killing the mother. The fetus happens to be in the way. I might not be, according to Amisha's presentation, I could argue that he wouldn't allow abortion in that situation. the mother might have to wait.
Would it make the mother weaker, though, going through chemo, having the child?
So then you'd have to, then we'd have to be a little bit more creative. We could potentially try to make the argument. Ramesh doesn't say it's
explicitly. It's not a direct...
Indirectly, the fetus is causing the mother to be in a situation where the cancer is causing more harm, then maybe we can argue that the fetus is a odiv. Yeah. Maybe.
It's very medically specific to like whatever was happening with that person. I mean, I don't know enough about it, obviously, but like, you know, I'm sure there would be a reason why like that baby, like her being pregnant specifically, was endangering her. Like, it was just simultaneously to the cancer.
So that's Neil's point. Yeah. So again, you would then have to make the case that a rodef can be someone who's compounding another illness, right? There's a guillotine about to cut off your head, and I'm jumping on top of the knife and trying to get it to go down faster, am I now a rodef?
I feel a little attacked, but I hear where you're coming from.
You hear why I focus things on you?
I do.
Okay.
But you can do that for, like, the other ones, too, maybe? Like, because the ectopic pregnancy, for example, like, it's the fact that the baby's growing in the fallopian tube. It's not, like, the fact that the baby, like,
she's going to end up dead.
She's going to end up dead, that's obvious, but, like, I'm trying to compare it to, like, the cancer situation.
Even easier. Yeah. Fallopian tube is even easier than all that, because regardless, this thing's not going to survive.
Right.
This thing's not growing into a fetus that can come out.
But I was thinking, like, about the baby directly killing her versus, like, the externalities.
The baby's killing her. Yeah, it's growing in the wrong place. It's clearly killing her.
There's always a
baby,
risk.
Again, strong word.
There's always a risk of the fetus endangering the mother. You can always find a way. It's a dangerous process. Pregnancy is not...
Is a risky thing.
It's a risk on its own.
Driving to the hospital is risky. I have to drive to the hospital because I have to give birth. Maybe I kill the fetus because getting into the car to go to the hospital is going to kill me. There's a perchance. Driving is dangerous.
It used to be even more dangerous.
Yeah. No seatbelts.
I was talking about pregnancy.
Okay, fine. Whatever. Whichever one. Again, so you'd have to... This is why we'd have to somehow limit the terms, which would be difficult to do. But you're right. That would be part of the question.
What if, when you're talking about ectopic pregnancy, like, removing the fallopian tube versus, like, then letting the baby die versus, like, killing the baby? Does that make a difference medically? Like, is that...
I am not an OB guy.
Okay.
So I'm not going to answer the medical question. Halachically, if there's a difference between the two, I don't know. I think it's the same thing. What's the difference?
If you're killing, like, I don't know, like, the process of an abortion for an ectopic pregnancy, but, like, if you're, I assume it's something to do with, like, making the baby, like, ending the life, right, while it's in there and then expelling it.
No, I think you just cut out the fallopian tube.
Okay, so that's the only thing you can do. Okay. I don't know.
I have no idea. Okay. Regardless, I don't think Halacha makes a difference. Okay. You're killing the thing. What do I care how you did it?
Okay.
It's dead. All right.
Cool.
that's the theme of tonight. The little Shugoda Fakhar, right? Fine. Ubil Deve Rabam, Shitamur Tuva. Right? I'm in the second full paragraph on this page. Ubil Deve Rabam, Shitamur Tuva. Hala inyan tam. De Rodef, en a chalak biyatza rosha. De gamkin Rodef, ke de hikshir of Chista. Right, there's a very simple question of the Rambam's presentation. We've discussed this. We said, right, once the fetus's head pops out, we now argue Mishamayim Karadfi, right? The heavens themselves are chasing this woman. It's not the fetus. Leave them alone. You can't touch them anymore. You can't kill the fetus. You can't abort the fetus. According to the Rambam's presentation, Ma'naf Kamina, what's the difference, right? Regardless, the fetus is killing the mother. If we're arguing Rodef, what difference does it make? Rodef is Rodef. Who cares if he's inside, if he's outside? What difference does it make? We've danced around this question a couple of weeks ago. There are a couple of answers. However, Moshe gives his answer. I have a very simple answer. I want to skip. Next highlight on the bottom of that. I have no idea why I highlighted that. Next one. What do I mean by that? I mean that the fetus is not a rodef, is not chasing the mother. Why? The bottom line is, he's arguing that when the fetus is still inside, and it's an interesting argument, I'm not 100% sure how to justify it, but I will present it to you, that when the fetus is still inside, then I know that when the mother is dying, I know who's killing who. The fetus is killing the mother. The mother's doing great. If we could just get that thing that's inside of her out, she'd be doing even better, right? Fetus is chasing mother. Once the fetus starts coming out, I'm confused. I analyze the situation, right? You see, Nir and I are running around each other in a circle, and you can't figure out who's trying to kill who. So as the person standing on the outside, you're confused. You know you have a mitzvah, that you have to kill the rodef, you have to kill the guy who's trying to kill the other guy, right? You look at the situation, we're like two puppies chasing tails or whatever it is, and we can't figure out who's trying to kill who. So we don't know who's the rodef. So I say, you know what? Mishamayim karadfi, I'm going to let God handle this one, and I'm staying out of it, right? Rav Moshe says that's the same thing once the fetus sticks its head out. Once it sticks its head out, I have no idea. Is the mother killing the fetus? Is the fetus killing the mother? I'm going to stay out of this one. I'm going to let nature take its course.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah, ask me any question and I'm going to answer you. I have no idea. But yeah, go for it. I don't understand, but I will try.
Okay. But like medically, like...
Oh, then I definitely don't know.
Okay. Don't know either. If the head is out already, like, is there going to be a medical... like? Is it going to be medically probable that, like, killing, that ending the baby or ending the baby's life at that point is going to actually, like increase the chances of the mother's doesn't die? Like, you know?
I'm
going
to answer you in the easiest way possible, and that is when the Mishnah and Ohalot wrote this down, I have absolutely no idea what the situation was.
Okay.
Nowadays, it's for sure totally different. I have a hard time imagining why they can't just say both or whatever, at least save the fetus, but I have no idea.
Okay. Right, so we brought the, it's possibly they were talking about breach even, because we don't really know the situation at that point.
But maybe. It's possible. But even then, I don't know what's going on. So you just do a C-section. I have no idea what's going on. So medically, I have no idea. But this is, again, the Mishnah, that we're analyzing the facts. And again, this is really just for him to explain the Rambam. Rav Moshe is going to do something fascinating in all this. Let me just point something out of what's happening here. So we're going to really appreciate what he's doing. This tshuva, maybe not as much, but the tshuva that we're definitely not going to get to tonight. But the tshuva Samech Tet, if we're still all in the mood of doing this next week, then we can really appreciate what it is that Rav Moshe is actually doing here. But the Rav Moshe has a little problem. Rav Moshe likes the Rambam, right? Rav Moshe stands by the Rambam's position. All this, there's a whole bunch of Rishonim that disagree with the Rambam. Right, so what does Rambam should do? It's very simple. Anyone who disagrees with the Rambam, right, either is not considered as important of a Rishon, so we're just knocking him out of the equation, or if they are that important of a Rishon, Tosfos, Rashi, whatever it is, really they were saying the same thing that the Rambam was saying. And let me explain to you why. It's amazing what he does, and it's fascinating to read, and I really wanted to focus on it, but whatever, we'll do it next week. I just show it to you. It's just amazing how Rambam is analyzing the sugya, but he ends up, his conclusion is, that clearly everyone agrees with the Rambam. Rav Moshe, it's just crystal clear that what we're talking about abortion, you're talking about murder. That's Rav Moshe's position. That's how he's analyzing this whole sugya. It's absolutely fascinating how he does it. That's what I wanted to show. But let's go through a little bit through this tshuva, and then we'll save the real meat, the real analysis for next week, I guess. And then we'll move on to other people's positions. Because again, Rav Moshe is the one extreme of this conversation. The other extreme, classically, as we mentioned in our prelude here to all of this, is probably Tzitzel Yezer, Waldenberg, and then you'll end up with people in between. Probably most people are somewhere in between the two of them. You basically end up with Rav Moshe, right? Rav Moshe's position is basically abortion is not allowed in pretty much any circumstance. Rav Waldenberg's position, abortion is pretty much allowed in almost every circumstance. And then everyone in between is, we can figure it out. We have what to talk about. That's exactly what the Rambam means. I'm skipping. What does that mean? Okay, great. Once you see that the fetus is coming out, then tivo shel olam, the way of nature, nature's course, is that the fetus is going to be coming out, and it's supposed to be here.
Okay, so
bottom line is, I see from all of this, the last line of the page, that killing a fetus is murder. Mamish. Shebelot tam du rodef aso. If I didn't have this whole concept of rodef, of the whole idea of chasing, it would be aser. After Rashi shepirsh b'shem hedre daf ayin bet, the cause mashal yatzel la'avir ha'olam lav nefeshu. We saw this Rashi. Rashi says that any time the fetus is still inside the womb, it's not considered a nefesh. And we'll see in the next tshuva where he really does. He doesn't just say that Rashi hints towards the Rambam. He says Rashi explicitly argues like the Rambam. But we'll get there. And he says also, Nishnet b'Sinai, right? Since the Isser of murder was set at Sinai, v'dinim elo em pratim v'dinim retzicha, u'gam leben noach, de'em pratim b'chazeh, v'l Yisrael v'aday ne'mar hakra. Right? This is a general problem that if you pasuk where we learn that you're not allowed to do abortion is maked dam be'adam, right? It's something that's inside someone else. In other words, a fetus inside a person. That pasuk was said before Matan Torah. So we might think that it only is relevant for non-Jews. But non-Jews are not allowed to abort. But Jews are allowed to abort. So the Rambam says, clearly that he at least holds like the position that it maintains that this is said across the board. It's said both before for non-Jews and even for Jews. The only difference would be that a non-Jew who causes an abortion would be chayv misa. His punishment would be death. And a Jew that aborts a fetus, his punishment would just be, I don't know, he did a lav or something like a malchus. He did an isser. But it wouldn't be a death penalty. And he says, and since there would be a isser of murder on a fetus, even if we know for a fact that this fetus will only live for a little bit, it'll be sick the entire time. They're going to have to go to extreme measures to take care of it. Even if we're worried that the mother's going to get sick from being in this horrible situation where she's basically watching her baby die for 2 to 3 years, even so, I'm very well aware of the situation that I'm putting this woman and this fetus in. Even so, you are not allowed to abort it. Because this is murder. Just like you're not allowed to abort a perfectly healthy fetus.
Does he have a definition of an Uber here?
What do you mean?
What is considered Uber? How many months
long? Not in this tshuva, but we'll see it next time. ובכלל צריך לידע שבדיקת הרופאים שידענו מבדיקים שהובלד כזה הוא רק אומדנה ואשר באמה שלא ישייך לסמוך על דבריהם בזה. He says, and not only that, the whole fact, remember, this whole tshuva is about testing. He says, even the test that they do, it's just, maybe yeah, maybe no, who knows how accurate it is. Just because they tell you that the kid's going to have Tay-Sachs, maybe it will, maybe it won't. Leave me alone. I won't even trust this test in the first place. So not only should you not do this test because you're not allowed to abort because it's murder, this test itself is inaccurate. So even if you give me a test and I would argue that you could abort in an extreme situation, I wouldn't trust the test because it's just an umdana. I don't know what that means. Maybe the statistics weren't as good. Our statistics are better. Again, medical statistics are usually have a much higher agdara than halachic statistics, right? We've spoken about this before. Halachically, if you have a rov, that's, what is that, 2 out of 3? If you have, or if you have 60%, depending which rov you want to use, which definition you want to use, we have a couple of different options, halachically. Medically, when we talk about something being significant, we have much higher parameters, right? I think for Down syndrome baby, the nuchal testing, right? That's like 1 in 30,000. I don't remember, but these numbers are much, much higher, right? The statistical probability of them being wrong are much smaller, right? So again, the umdina, the fact that he calls it just, you know, maybe, I'm not exactly sure what to do with that. Halacha statistics and medical statistics are not playing on the same field at all. So I'm not really sure what he means.
So what are you... Sorry. What are you referring to as halacha statistics here? Like, what do you mean when they're... What are they estimating?
So in general, right, we have different.
He's one out of four, example, in the 2 years.
No, that's just because he's just talking about the recessive, him, the chances of 25%.
Right, for him, that's like, you know.
No. He's fine with that. If you tell him it's 100% chance that this one will have to, maybe he'll tell him not to get. I think he would still tell her, go ahead. Like, what do you want me to do? You can't abort. Not the just to the woman. I mean that, you know, if you drop a piece of milk into a pot of meat, right? So what is that, 1 in 60th? I'm trying to think of different statistic options that you have. A rov means 2 out of 3, right? Just most of the time, you're not going to have something, right? Chametz on Pesach is 1 in 1,000. Any number that you throw at me that you've ever seen in halacha of chances of this not happening are really, really, really small. Medically, they're much smaller, right? Our chances, we're talking about, I don't know, under 1%, right? It's not playing on the same field at all. It's a totally different ballgame.
Yeah, I was trying to, like, even...
So I'm not sure what he means by yom dinah. Maybe his tests were really bad. Okay. But I don't know what he means by yom dinah. It's fascinating that apparently he wasn't aware. I would have added to his tshuva if I was writing this. And I was maintaining this position, I would have just added that amniocentesis has a danger of causing a miscarriage. So just throw that in there, you know, as a list of reasons of why not to do it. But again, it's not, I don't think it really would be relevant halachically because, again, statistics over here are not the same. The medical danger is not the same as the halachic danger, so I don't really think it's relevant. But again, this is his position. What's going to be, I think, very, very interesting is actually looking at how he analyzes all these different. All these Rishonim and everybody else that says anything else, that's the tshuva, Simen Samech Tet. And I think we'll skip the next tshuva. And we'll just, I think we should move on for a Moshe. So I think we'll just spend one more week on a Moshe, just looking at that tshuva, just to see, really appreciate what it is that he's doing here, because it's very impressive. And then we'll move on to probably Titzel Yezel, Rosh Shlomo Zalman, and then maybe Rabbi Leichhardt, end of all that.
Good.
Yeah? All right. Good.